This session was part of the Youth Leaders Forum led by Brother Kerry Schmidt. Brother Schmidt oversees the youth and student ministries departments at Lancaster Baptist Church. This session was part of the Spiritual Leadership Conference 2010, hosted by Dr. Paul Chappell and the Lancaster Baptist Church.
I'm going to crank through this, and here's what we'll do. I'll tell you what we do on some of this stuff, and then if somebody has an idea that you feel would contribute to the group, then feel free to raise your hand, and we'd love for you to share it as well. We're recording this, I believe, so I'm going to read the questions, make sure we get it going. What does a normal week calendar look like for the teens of LBC? And what does a regular midweek service agenda look like? And somebody else asked that same question about our Wednesday night format for youth ministry. So let me start with the weekly schedule. 10 o'clock is Sunday school every Sunday. We have three departments in the youth group. We have junior high, which is 7th and 8th. I would not be opposed to doing 6th, 7th, and 8th. That's how a lot of middle schools are. Senior high is 9th through 12th. And then college and career is 18 to 21, maybe 22. But basically a college-age person. We created that department. We had teens and singles. But our 18-year-olds were graduating into a department with 30 and 40-year-olds, and suddenly going from a teen retreat to a singles retreat where they were playing Scrabble and shuffleboard, and going from water balloons to shuffleboard was a little bit of a leap. So then they were falling away spiritually. So we created, we pushed singles up to 22 and later. And we then broke that department down. But our college and career is 18 to 21 or 22, and they fall under the student ministry umbrella. They've got their own teachers and their own classes. They don't come to senior high activities. They never mix, but three departments. Everybody's in Sunday school at 10 o'clock. Our Sunday school started out, everybody combined, one class, me teaching it. Then we split junior high, senior high, when I had a couple that could teach junior high. But they were boys and girls combined, just junior high in one room, senior high in one room. I would do that sooner if I had to go back again, because the age groups are very, very different. And I, even if I just had a few kids, I would try to have separate Bible times and separate activities for those age groups. Everybody's 7th through 10th grade now is divided by grade and gender. So there is a 7th grade boys and 7th grade girls, and all the way up through. When they get to 11th grade, we bring them back. They're combined, 11th grade, into one class. And Brother Chappell teaches that class. I teach the 12th graders at 10 o'clock every week. For a long time, we had 7th and 8th, 9th and 10th, 11th and 12th, and I had the 11th and 12th grade class. But that class, again, with growth, we began to see that we weren't getting the personal attention and the personal relationships, so we enlist more people and divide the classes down. And My ideal right now is that a class would have 25, 30 people, or maybe 10 to 20. If it's 10 or 20, I'm comfortable. If it's 30, I'm starting to think, okay, what do we do? And it depends on the teacher, too. Some teachers can handle 30 or 40 kids really well, and some teachers, you put 40 kids in front of them, and they just fall to pieces. So that's a little bit about the Sunday morning structure. Sunday nights we use for fellowships. Not every Sunday night, but a few times a year, every grade, we'll have an after-church fellowship. Sometimes it's as simple as we just impromptu will say to the seniors in Sunday school, hey, let's go to In-N-Out Burger tonight, bring some money, get on the bus after church, let your parents know we'll be back in an hour. Sometimes it's weeks ahead, we've planned it, and they're going to a person's house or to our house. Those are really special times. They're probably the most effective activities we have. I like to work through the grades. We used to have the whole senior high over, then it got too big, and now we do one grade at a time. So I'll have the 12th graders over, then I'll have the 11th graders over. Some nights we will say, we're going to do the whole senior high, we're going to go to four different homes. And we plan it that way. That's budgeted. If I'm going to have the seniors to my house, it's about an $80 expense. And that's in the budget, and we PO it and get reimbursement. Sodas, usually it's just sodas and pizza. We've done like breakfast cereal before and stuff like that. They love that. I'm not trying to, you know, have a big buffet, and the kids don't really care about that. They care about spending time with you. They love to be at your home. It puts them in a frame of mind, other than spilling Coke on your ceiling, it puts them in a frame of mind. There's Coke on my ceiling right now. Puts them in a frame of mind that they just feel a connection with you because they've sat in your living room, and it gives you just a connection with them that's very special. I'll talk about that for a minute. We come to my house, and for about 20 or 30 minutes, they're playing ping pong or playing pool or hanging out in my backyard or sitting around talking. Once everybody's there, we will pray. Sometimes I'll invite parents to come, a couple of parents. We couldn't have everybody at the same time. We'll pray. I might go around the room and have everybody introduce themselves. There might be some kids that are newer. I make sure I try to mix the new kids and introduce them to people. I'll talk for a minute and just tell them how much we love them and how thankful we are that they're in the youth group and can come to our house. Then we'll pray, and they'll have pizza. I tell them to keep the food downstairs. That was a hard lesson learned. I have an upstairs like loft, and there's a pool table and some area up there they can hang out. But after they destroyed all that up there, I told them they have to keep their drinks and pizza downstairs. I would encourage you, if you're going to do a lot of this, put in like a hardwood floor or something, tile, linoleum, drape it with plastic, do something. Carpet, they just destroy, you know. I mean, a year or two of new carpet at our house, it's just gone. So we did a hardwood floor eventually, but they love it. There are kids that will spill or break something or something like that, but most of the kids, they just love to be there, you know. After everyone's eaten, I call them in to one area, either my family room or my living room. My living room, I have a piano, so if I have somebody that can play the piano, or if there's a kid in the class that plays, hey, come play us a song, you know, we kind of all gather around there. And then we'll just have testimonies. We might sing a couple songs. It's not a hard sell. Hey, you're not singing. Come on, louder. It's not that kind of thing. We're just casual. We're just relaxed, you know. We'll goof around. I'll pick on them and tell jokes and just laugh. We laugh a lot at those times. And then I'll share a challenge with them about where they're at in high school, what grade they're in, what, you know, what they can expect, how the devil's going to try to get them. We did something last week that was so cool. My son had a 16th birthday party. We had a bunch of his friends for his party. We did it after church. We surprised him. And when I did my backyard, I put a little fire pit, but it's expensive to use, and I need to get some wood. It's a gas thing. But for his birthday, I thought, well, we'll splurge. We'll use the gas fire pit. So we turned the gas fire pit on and put up chairs around it. And pretty soon, the kids just kind of gravitated around that fire, which I'd never done this. And they were all kind of gathered around, and then my son, oldest son, Lance, came out with his guitar, and he just started strumming, and another kid went and grabbed another guitar, and he started strumming, so now we got two guitars going. And then somebody said, hey, you got any marshmallows? And I said, yeah, bring the marshmallows. We got coat hangers, and then we started singing, and it was just so impromptu and so unstructured and just singing songs that they knew and that the guys could figure out on the guitar. And we must have sat out there for an hour and a half while the sun was setting. It was July 4th, and there's people shooting off illegal fireworks in the neighborhood. It was one of the most memorable times we've ever had with teenagers. And we sat there, and once it got dark, the fire was going, and we were kind of done singing, and then we went around and had testimonies from teen camp. And then I said, it was Larry's birthday, so I took everybody to tell me something about Larry, and we all told funny stories about Larry. And it was just really great. I told Dana when it was all over, we're going to use that fire pit a lot more now that I've experienced that. But that's a Sunday night, once, twice a month, okay? Wednesday night is Bible study. Let me back up. Tuesday night is soul winning, and we used to go soul winning all on a bus on a Wednesday afternoon, and that worked really well for a long time. We got to where we were taking 2-3 buses and 120 kids, and it was really a job. So we broke it down to Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings, and now everybody goes in a car. And we got that model from Brother Lapina at First Baptist. We just basically called him and said, what do you guys do and how do you do it? And that's been working pretty well for us. It's a lot of logistics to keep it going. You got to have a lot of drivers and a lot of adults committed to taking kids. But that's Tuesday night. Wednesday night is Bible study, and we have junior high and senior high Bible study. I've already confessed I'm not a big, slapstick, hilarity, bob for apples in a toilet and drink baby food kind of guy, you know, for youth ministry. So you're going to think our Bible study format's really boring, okay? But for senior high, they start in church, we sing a couple of congregationals, when we shake hands, they're dismissed. They come to Bible study, and Brother Chapel will start that, give a few announcements, and then by that time I'm out of the adult service and I come over. And I might give them some announcements or goof off with them for a time, a minute or two, and then I say, okay, open your Bibles and take your outline, and we give them an outline. And sometimes we have a PowerPoint, sometimes we don't, and we teach a lesson. And it's really boring. Not the lesson, but the format. We don't do games, and I'm not against it, I'm not opposed to it, we just teach a lesson. And they like to have Bible study. There's always a group of kids that I'm fighting, you know, for their attention. But generally, 80, 90% of our kids, if we don't have teen Bible study, it bothers them. They wish we had. And they really cherish it. We do series of things. We just got done with the series through the Ten Commandments. Hook, Line, and Sinker I had used as a series. Different by Design was a series. Things like that. So that's Wednesday. Junior high would play a few games and do a few things with the kids. And then John Sisson would teach a lesson, so he conducts that one. Saturday morning is soul winning again. And then we have an activity, other than the Sunday night fellowships, we will typically have one activity a month. And that's either a Friday evening or a Saturday afternoon. And some, like teen camp was our June activity. Our May activity was our spring banquet for senior high. Just talk through this here. July, this afternoon, right now, they're at Mulligan's. That's the activity. August, we have a volleyball barbecue. We come out here in the evening, and we play volleyball and barbecue carne asada and corn on the cob, and it's a big senior high thing. It's a lot of fun. And then I sit them all down, and we play some games and have some testimonies about the summer, and I'll give them a challenge. September, last couple Septembers, I think we've gone to Eric Johnson's youth rally down at Liberty Baptist in Newport Beach, which is a really good thing. October, what are we doing in October? I don't remember. We'll pick something, like we might go rent bikes at the beach or go to the zoo or what's that? Trick or treating, yeah. November is maybe bowling or ice skating or something like that. December, we have a Christmas party. And we'll do different things for our Christmas party. Sometimes we've done a bonfire out on the field, cook hot dogs and stuff. We've gone roller skating, we've gone ice skating, we've gone on a boat thing, done different things for Christmas. January, we do a filler activity like a fun center type of thing. February, we have a winter retreat, which is not really a winter retreat. We just go to Disneyland and stay at a Marriott and have preaching. People laugh at me because we don't go to the snow. We just don't. So March, we do some sort of cheap filler activity, you know, putt-putt or bowling or something like that. April is our youth conference, and that's our activity. And if you think you see a pattern here, there's a three or four high-dollar activities. 80, 120, 200, whatever. And then everything else in between, I try to make like $10. And then the Sunday night things, we don't charge for at all. The exception to that is senior class. We do about four or five special activities with the senior class by themselves, in addition to all the stuff I just went through. Okay, we'll take them... don't kill me for this. We take the seniors to Universal Studios in October, and we take them out to dinner. It's a big day. They love it. We have a good time with them. We take them to the Reagan Library in November. That's like getting right with God after going to Universal. Just, I'm kidding. You know, to offset. No, we have a good time. We take them out to dinner. We have them to our house a little more than the other classes, and we do some special stuff with them. Our winter retreat, we either go to Disneyland or Knott's Berry Farm. We stay at a hotel. We have evening service and morning sessions, and it's a good time. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of our program as far as activity and spiritual growth. Teen parent meetings would come on top of that, and maybe a few extra things throughout the year. Okay, so that takes care of those two questions. What's the best way to deal with youth workers you inherit when you come to the church? who should have never been youth workers in the first place. Honestly, I'd be real slow to do anything. I would get to know them. I'd try to build a relationship with them. I'd try to disciple them and grow them. And I would really go to the pastor and say, help me out. How do I approach this? And frankly, I just do what he tells me to do in that situation. And then I would try to build around them. And I'd try to add to the team and with my new people. And the dust will settle in time. You know, you don't need to fix that problem overnight. Let the pastor direct you through that. Try to preserve that family by his discretion. And then try to build around it, okay? How do I transform a sports-minded youth group into a spiritually-minded youth group? There's three questions here. What do you do when you are the youth pastor and your kid is the rebel? Or the pastor's kid is the rebel? And I have 4, 5, 7th, and 8th graders, 25, 9th, and 12th graders. Should I split junior high, senior high? That one's the easy one. Yes. The first question, sports-minded into spiritually-minded. I wish I knew what you mean, and I wish I could spend a week or two with your youth group. I don't mind that kids are into basketball or into football or like sports. I don't think they should idolize it. I think it should be in its rightful place. I don't know if the question is coming from the context of maybe you're not athletic and you hate sports and you just think it's all carnal. Because some people do. Or maybe there really is this whole, you know, history that this all this youth group thinks about is football. But I would teach the Bible, and I would teach priorities, and I would teach with passion. My first thought to every problem is, what do I need to teach from the Word of God to grow them through this? Okay? And I'm not looking to solve any problem overnight. I'm looking to build values and build principles and teach. So if I had kids that were just totally dominated by sports, I would weave that into the teaching and the preaching. And I would try to, and I'd build a program around those principles that reinforce the spiritual priorities. But I would not condemn sports, you know. I wouldn't be like they're reprobates for liking sports, okay? So not sure the context of that question, but I hope that helps. What do you do when you are the youth pastor and your kid is the rebel? Wow. I'm just trying to the burden, the heartbreak, I'd do whatever I had to do to get my kid back. I'll just say that. I mean, that definitely hinders you. You don't have parents that, you don't have credibility with parents if your kid is rebellious. You could have a teen, you know, program and watch kids, but you're not going to have a lot of credibility. If you have teenagers and they're rebellious, you should talk to the pastor. How does he want you to handle it? But you really need to go back to square one and find out where you lost ground with your teen. And you need to do whatever you have to do to regain that teenager. In the case where it's your pastor's kid, that's a very difficult situation. You love that kid. You work around his influence, her influence. You teach biblical principles, even if it casts a bad light on that kid. You don't have to shame that kid or point that kid out. You are fighting with your pastor for that kid. It's you can't take this position of why doesn't pastor do something about this kid. You may have to talk to the pastor about the situation, and that's the hardest thing you will ever do in the ministry as a youth pastor, is go to your pastor and broach the subject of your pastor's child. I think I've had to talk to pastor about his kids with every one of them but Danielle. And I can stand here and tell you that I love all of them like they were my own kids. And when I got youth ministry, I prayed that the Lord would, Matt was 2 at the time or something, and I really prayed that, Lord, if you'll let me, I would really like to see Pastor Chapel's kids all grow up and be here to help with that. There have been occasions where I've talked to Brother Getch or somebody like that, even a staff member like that, about situations, and they're really hard. You have to go to those situations very humbly and recognizing it could be you someday. You could be on the other side of the equation. You need to approach it the way you would want it approached if this were your kid. It's really hard. So you definitely want to deal very wisely and prayerfully and talk to the pastor. Ideally, you want to get the pastor seeing the situation, and a lot of times they don't. A lot of times a parent is seeing one thing at home and you're seeing another thing at the youth group, and that's why that team thing is so important. You want to sit down and explain. You're not condemning, you're not criticizing, but you got to get the parent, in this case it's the pastor, seeing the reality and engaging in that battle in prayer and all those other things, and you can win that kid in time. And if it's just a real extreme problem, extreme situation, that prayer and love and patience and the right kind of meetings and teamwork still doesn't work, then you're going to have to ride it out, okay? And I will tell you that we have had seasons in our youth ministry. Sometimes we have a class that's real strong, and then we've come into a time where two or three classes are real weak. And I can't put a finger on why. But I know that, I'll tell you, going back 2 years, I had a 3-year stint of youth ministry that every week I wanted to quit because I felt like I was failing. Okay. There were about 3 times in that 3-year period that I just flat went to pastor and said, I'm doing my best, but I know what's taking place in these grades, and I know that it's not what you want or what I want, and if you feel somebody could do a better job at it, it's open, you know. And no, Brother Schmidt, no, you keep doing what you're doing. Let's keep fighting the battle. Let's keep praying. And you know what happened, though? We fought, prayed, preached. I mean, there's a couple classes I stood every Sunday, a group of seniors, and felt like 80% of those kids were just checked out. And there was 2 or 3 years running where it was that way. It wasn't quite 80%. It was probably more like 30 or 40%. And isn't the devil crafty at that? He causes you to see those kids, and you ignore the 60% that are just like sponges. You know, the 40% of those kids that 3 years ago and 4 years ago in our youth group were hard, rebellious, and struggling, probably 25 or 30% of that 40% are now doing very, very well. Many of them are in Bible college. Many of them came back a year or 2 out of the youth group and apologized and wrote me long letters of, boy, Brother Schmidt, we're so sorry, you know. Sometimes you got kids that they just get on fire in 10th and 11th grade, and sometimes you got kids that they don't get on fire until they graduated. But hang in there, okay, because you'll get through that. But I'll tell you what I would do if I was in this number 2 position, pastor's kid is the rebel, I would dedicate myself to loving that kid and doing everything within my power to fight for that kid, because if you can help salvage that kid, you can help spare your pastor a great deal of grief in the ministry going for many years. And it is a cause worth entering into. And if you were the devil, which kid would you go after? You wanted to hurt the whole church and the whole youth group. Which family would you pick? Just let it sink in. Okay? And make sure you're not looking at that through tainted, you know, crummy pastor's kid. Before you even think that thought, you better step back and say, how much time have I spent with him? How much time have I talked to him? How many times have I told him I love him? How many times have I written him a letter? Have I just taken this, he's my enemy position? I hope not. How are new believers discipled in the youth ministry? Through that process I just talked to you about, and one-on-one in discipleship, in the cars, of taking kids out one-on-one. We do not at this point have a daily in the Word ministry for the teens. But I feel like Sunday School and Bible study is doing it well. How do you plan and run your summer camp? We run our own camp. We have it at Big Bear. Churches in the area, region, are welcome to be a part of it. If you're interested in coming to our summer camp, let me know. Last summer, this past 2 weeks ago, we had Kurt Skelly. Next summer, we have Dave Delaney. The following summer, we have Brother Shetler. We have about 500 that come to camp. I need about 550 this year to keep the camp exclusive, so sign up and come with us. We morning preaching, team competition, lunch, team competition, a couple hours of free time, more evening preaching after dinner. It's a full week. It's a great week. My schedule and my pattern of team camp is from the Wilds, because that's where I grew up going, and you could call them and get a schedule and some thoughts on that. But if you live in this region, 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours drive, we'd love to have you come be a part of that with us. We have a great week. How do you handle core youth group having problems with each other, resulting in newer teens not wanting anything to do with the youth group? Teach. Love one another. I mean, it's there. You're never going to have this utopian youth group where everybody's nice to each other. I wish. Kids are mean to each other. And that is a problem for guests and visitors. And you got to fight the battle and keep fighting the battle. And you'll have, like I said, I've had seasons where classes would just soon spit on a visitor. And other classes were like, hey, a visitor, you know, come hug me and welcome, you know. Want to get saved right now? I mean, I've had some classes that are just all over visitors and some classes that act like they don't even see them. Just go where you're at and work with it and play to the leaders. Pastor Chappell said to me a few years ago, he said, and I didn't realize that this was even the case, but he said, you lead the leaders in the youth group and then the leaders influence the rest of the group. He was telling me this was my mode of operation, and I'd never really thought much about it. But from his outside observation, that's what we do. And I think that is okay. I think Jesus developed a core that he gave a lot of time to. And you're going to have kids that are just on fire for God and soft and tender-hearted. Don't apologize for giving them more attention and more time and lift that up as the model. And that's going to set somewhat of a tone for your youth ministry. But get your workers to greet visitors personally. Take those visitors to the good, nice kids and introduce them and mix that group on purpose. I've taught Bible lessons, how to be a youth group, how to love each other, how to treat each other. Different by Design talked a lot about etiquette and behavior and stuff like that. And so training. A lot of times we see a problem like that, cliques or issues or social stuff, and we go, oh, it's a Christian youth group, it shouldn't be. I'm appalled. Instead of going, they're people, I should have expected this. And by the way, if they had all that under control, they wouldn't need you. If they were all great, mature Christians, you know, prepare the lessons and get in there and teach them and train them and illustrate it. I involve kids in the Bible studies. If I'm teaching a lesson about, you know, a visitor or something, I'll get a few kids up here and act like, okay, they're a clique and I'm a new guy or that's a new guy. And he comes in, he's, you know. We had, and a lot of times your kids are cold on purpose, and a lot of times they're cold because they don't know better. We had a girl in my 12th grade class, a visiting girl came in one time. She walked over to this row right here. She came up to a girl, and there was an empty seat. And she said, could I sit there? And the girl goes, no, my friend's coming. Now, this was one of the best girls in the youth group. This was a brand new visitor. This was one of the sweetest girls in the youth group. No, my friend's coming. And the little visitor girl goes over and wanders off by herself, and my wife went and got her. And I looked at that girl and go, what are you doing? She's like, and she was mortified when she realized what she did. She was just checked out spiritually and did not intend to offend. It just didn't sink into her. And I said, go. You know, and I pointed, and the girl got up and went, I'm sorry, you know, and introduced herself. She really didn't mean to. She just needed to be slapped. Okay. I'm a youth director considering Facebook because the families are on it and I can communicate on it to them quickly about youth. Do you see this as effective and helpful? Probably helpful. I don't know how effective. If it's not everybody, it's going to be ineffective with some. Don't mean for this to be a long answer, but what about guidelines, privacy settings, concerns, etc.? There's a lot of concerns with stuff like Facebook. I started Facebook thing, 6 months ago or something. I don't have time to sit there and scroll through everybody's posts, you know. I'm not policing it. I got on it for one reason, what this man talks about, just that so many people are using it. So many parents and kids in this church use Facebook Here's how I compare it, okay? If I walked out to the volleyball field and there were teenagers hanging out there, and I see five really good kids and three really rebellious kids. Let's say I see four struggling kids and a new kid, and they're grouped up talking. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to walk up to that group, and I'm going to, hey, how you guys doing? I'm going to shake hands and put my arms around and say, hey, everybody doing okay? Hey, you know, let me introduce some other people. I'm going to break that up. Why? Because maybe I don't want those three kids influencing that new guy, you know? I'm going to try to pastor that environment. Or let's just say there's kids out here hanging out, and I just walk out there. They're going to see me, and I just know that my presence changes something about the dynamic of how that group functions. They're going to probably be a little more guarded in their conversation, a little more careful about their, you know, guy-girl contact. They're going to maybe not talk about some things they would talk about because I'm there. And I think it's if I get on Facebook and a kid decides to friend me, that says a lot to me. I know they can set to where I don't see certain things. But when a kid says, I want to be Brother Schmidt's friend on Facebook, it tells me they're probably using Facebook wholesomely. And then it has become somewhat of a communication. There's a couple of really important things to be careful of. Don't get tied up with girls if you're a man. All right. A girl messages you, what time does youth activity start? 7 p.m. Be careful, okay? Don't get into this realm. You better check it with your pastor and make sure he's comfortable with all that. I would be cautiously very, very careful, but I agree that I can't believe the number of people that are on this and the amount of time they spend on it. And so at least I can throw up a Bible verse or throw up a good report of something and I know they're seeing it. And so there is a good use for it. It can definitely be a distraction. Anyway, I hope that answers. What priorities should a teen budget have? Should the pastor be asked for it? Expected? Fundraisers, how many? Low-income families, camp, youth conference activities? Sponsorships, good questions. We do have a budget. We budget, you know, supplies and training materials and some simple activities and to take boys and girls out to lunch, you know, one-on-one mentoring things and stuff like that. All of our activities pay for themselves. We usually try to add a couple dollars here and there where we're making a little bit, if we lose a little bit on another one, we're okay. For camps and retreats, we budget enough of a margin that if we fall a little bit low on registration, we don't lose too much money. I would leave that up to your pastor. I would talk to him about it. If you want more details, email us. I had to wrestle with the fundraiser concept a long time ago, and I feel about fundraisers the way I feel about water balloons. I know that, you know, sometimes they're needful, but I really hate spending time on them. We have a fundraiser that we do that you might consider. We go to businesses. We ask them to give us a discount for a card like this. And buy one, get one free, 10%, 15%, whatever. We get about 30 or 40 businesses. Most businesses are like, yeah, put me on there. I'd love to be on there. Because we tell them we're going to sell this to around town and to our church family, and it'll generate business for you. Most business owners with a brain would say, yeah, put me on that. Once we get enough commitments, we make up a little card like this. You can find a place in your town that prints these cards for a dollar or two. You just come up with the artwork. And then we sell these. The kids sell these for $10. We sell them to the kids for two. They cost us one. So the youth ministry makes a dollar that goes towards teen camp. The kids make $8 on every card they sell, and they're easy to sell. And you've spent time finding the businesses, and that's it. And then it's all on the kid and the parents. And they can stand out in front of Walmart. They can go door to door, people in the church. And pastor doesn't even mind us. He doesn't like us doing a lot of fundraisers to the church family because they just get dinged all the time. But this is not a bad fundraiser because there is a benefit to this. I mean, there's car washes and dry cleaners and all kinds of fast food restaurants and free pizzas and stuff on here that if you use any of these businesses, this card pays for itself multiple times over. And it's just something that just slip in your wallet. My kids rake in the money on these cards. We've paid for teen camp for 7 or 8 years in a row with these cards. And we'll take my daughter, Haley. She's a little bigger now, but when she was real little, nobody said no. buy a car? You know, I'm just like, they're just pouring money onto this little girl. I think I could have got arrested or something because, like, child labor laws or something. But they're easy to sell. We would go to one of these businesses. For instance, there's a Denny's on here, 15% off your Denny's order. And we go stand out in front of Denny's at dinner time. And, hey, would you like to save 15%? Would you like to? And everybody would buy one. And 2 hours later, we've made $400. Everyone's going to teen camp. You know, it was, I mean, think about, if they work at McDonald's, they make $8.50 an hour. If they sell one of these cards in an hour, they've just, that's like, but they could sell 2, 3, 4 of these in an hour. And it's a really easy fundraiser, and it works. So that's the one real big fundraiser that we do for the youth group. The school does some other ones, candy sales and car washes and stuff, but that's our main one. Hope that helps with that one. Okay, let's see here. What do you do with a parent who's not spiritually qualified to help in the youth group but feels called to be a youth worker? Without being asked. I would let them come to youth functions, but I'd let them know we're not ready for them to be a youth worker. And I'd talk to the pastor about the needs of that particular family and how to explain it. I would definitely talk with pastor and get some guidance on that one. Teen discipleship, implementing godly standards, comes back to teaching. Where to start with worldly teens, no help, no experience, no standards, but a growing church. New Christians. Love it. Man, I love it. Teach them the Bible. Just dig in and start teaching them and love them where they're at. You've got this. You have mostly public school kids. Man, it's awesome. And they're in the thick of it. They're wrestling with sin every day. You're like the Apostle Paul at Ephesus. I mean, you're dealing with pagans, and they just got saved. So love it and enjoy it. Topical or series preaching, I do a little bit of both. But let the Lord lead you on that. If there was only one teen class, your child was going to that class, and you were very apprehensive of the teacher of that class, how would you handle it? Help me out with this. Me as the youth pastor, I don't know who asked this question. Me as the youth pastor, I don't want my kid to go to a class at my church. Is that the question? Does anybody know? Not here. Okay. Well, all right. Do you ever have an activity? By the way, let me address something on that. Tying into what I said about parents earlier, I've had parents that came to our church and would not let their kids come to youth ministry. Are you okay with that? What do you say if you're visiting the parent and they say, well, we enjoy the church, we thank you for letting us come, but we're not going to let them go to Sunday school. What do you do? Stupid homeschool family. Don't get an attitude about it. Hey, you could win them. You could win them. Most of them. I've had several families that have said that when they came in. You know what I say? No problem. You're the parent. You're the authority. I'm just happy to help however I can help. You decide how I can help. And I say, but now listen. And now this is what I say after that. I think I know why you feel that way. You've probably been in a church that had a really lame youth ministry. And if I was from where you came from, I'd probably feel the same way. So I don't blame you. But what I would encourage you to do before you make that decision is why don't you come visit our youth ministry? Why don't you come to the classes? Why don't you come to some activities? And even if you don't want your teen to come, why don't you just come? And then make your decision. But at least you are informed. Every time I've said that, the parents have taken me up on it, and the teenagers ended up coming to youth ministry in time. So you can win them, all right? Do you ever have an activity geared for teens to bring their parents? I love the idea. We've done it a few times. We don't do it on a regular basis. We probably should. I love the idea. Books to read. I wrote an article. I've written two articles that I posted on my blog about books. One was about time management books. The other was about books for Christian parents. And I really believe those are the best books for youth ministry, too. And I think I listed 5 books for Christian parents. Shepherding a Child's Heart is a must read. Anything you can read about dealing with kids, that's you, and helping families, that's you. So I would dive in. There's not a lot of youth ministry books that are great. We have one by a man named Jim Crone. Anybody read that book, Biblical Youth Work? That's a pretty good book. That I think we stock that, and he's a good man. He's been a youth pastor for a long time. I'm real careful with the new evangelical stuff. Doug Fields from Saddleback. I've read some of his stuff, and it's, you know, there's some good takeaways, but it's, some of it just scares me too. If kids aren't invited to parent meeting, what do you do with them? I think I answered that one earlier. How do you communicate with parents that don't speak English? Brother, the gift of tongues. You got to get someone that can translate for you. And I do have team parent meetings with the Spanish ministry. And Brother Navarrete interprets. Sometimes I'll go over and teach one. Sometimes he will get a headset and listen to me teach mine in English, and he's translating across the way. We've done that both ways, okay? But if I'm meeting with a Spanish-speaking family, I'll have someone come in that can help me, okay? How does Pastor Chapel discipleship... Wait a minute. Oh, how does that work with a teenager? He spoke in relation to an adult. I think I've kind of answered that in the program that exists. And we do... Brother Ermler, shout to me if I'm off base on this, because you helped us for a number of years. I think, I want to step back from our youth ministry and say, we put more focus on personal one-on-one ministry than most youth groups do. Okay. I want our youth staff and our youth workers taking kids to lunch, taking them soul winning, one-on-one, and discipleship happens in an informal way through that. But we regularly figure out who's been visited, who's been taken out to lunch, and we make sure we get everybody. Okay, how did you handle being a youth pastor and a father? I love this question. When your oldest son first came into the youth group, how did you prepare for your son being in the youth group where his father was the youth pastor? I asked this same question to two or three guys right before when they were in elementary school. I took Lance out to eat one night after soul winning. I sat down with him. He was in sixth grade about to come into the youth group, and I said, hey, Lance, as you're getting ready to come into the youth group, how do you feel about me being the youth pastor? Now, if you've got a good relationship with your son, you're going to be surprised about his answer. I said, would you rather me not be the youth pastor so you can have a youth pastor that's not your dad? He actually almost started to cry. He got this look on his face like that hurt that I actually thought he might. And he got the most innocent... He said, no. And I said, are you? He said, why do you ask that, Dad? I said, well, because I'm your dad, and maybe you don't want me to be your youth pastor too. I'm just not sure. Now, since that time, my kids have been very privileged to grow up in a ministry where they had me, but they also had Josh Ermler, and they had Dave Delaney for a little while, and they had Larry Chappell for a little while, and they had Adam Langston for a little while, and we've had college interns. And so I feel like my kids have had a multiplicity of youth pastors. But I did talk to them about it and say, are you okay with that? And it's just, I'm telling you, I have loved my kids' teenage years. It's been awesome. Parenthood can't get any better. I mean, I thought it was awesome when they were 3. I thought it was awesome when they were 8. I'm like, I was afraid when they became teenagers. But man, it's been even better. And it's just only them driving that's a little scary. Okay, a little life-threatening at times. Okay, this one's from Dennis. Will you pay my way for the cruise? I actually approached the cruise line, and they said, you're not even permitted on the ship. So, I'm the youth pastor at a new church, 2 left, and we'll be almost done. I'm the youth pastor at a new church plant, which is going on 2 years next month. There's no youth ministry. What is your suggestion for the best way to meet, relate to, and begin a ministry to the teens in our city? I'm going to say a couple things, then I want you to talk, because you've got some good ideas. New church, no youth ministry. How do I meet, relate, and begin ministry to teens in our city? I would go, I won't do this now because I'll probably get arrested. I would go, when I was 22, 23, 24, I'd just go in the afternoons and go to public school campuses. And I would hang out when school dismissed. And I'd just walk around and meet kids. And I'd invite them to our youth group. And there's this mad rush of everybody leaving school, but then there's always kids waiting around for rides. And that's the kids I'd go talk to. And I'd witness to them and try to talk to them, invite them. If their parents pulled up, I'd go talk to their parents. I'm the youth pastor, invite you. We had Bible clubs at that time, too. I had a couple Bible clubs on a couple schools. I'd go conduct those Bible studies during lunch. I would go, when I did have a couple of public school kids, I'd go to their school and have lunch with them and meet their friends. We'd go to arcades and go soul winning and hand out tracts. That's not so much of a thing now because of game systems, but go to places where kids were hanging out, try to meet them. But I'll tell you, that's always been secondary to reaching families. My 95% of my soul winning efforts since I got here have been trying to reach families, reach families, reach families. I would not recommend you just get this mentality, I'm going to go win teenagers to the Lord. Win the family to the Lord. And if you've got a teenager that you've won to the Lord, go try to reach the family. And you'll be surprised what God will do. Dennis, talk about what you do, though. You couldn't do the Bible club, so you did the substance. You've got some great stuff going. So stand up for a minute and tell what you do. I just loved his idea of becoming a substitute teacher. And that may not work for you. Your pastor may not want you to. There's even a little bit of income from it. But he said, you know, I couldn't figure out a way to start Bible clubs. So I decided to get a substitute teaching credential. And a couple days a month, he's on different public school campuses. And he gets to know kids that way. And God's blessed it. Last question, then I'll just see if there's anybody else that has some contributions, some ideas. What's involved in a blog like yours to help teens or to help teach our teens and parents? Blogs are real easy. It's find a teenager that knows how to do one and have them teach you. That's what I would do. They're real easy. They're, you know, usually they're free. I started mine because I wanted to learn about it because I'm over the media department. And I just started throwing up stuff on there that people ask for anyway. So now somebody calls and says, hey, what about this? I say, hey, well, there's an article about it. Go, you know, and just so it's like a repository. We do want to start one in fact, it's in the works, for our teens and parents to go to for information. It's a great way to communicate. Look on this blog. This tells you the schedule. This tells you the cost and all that sort of thing. It's pretty simple if you go to a blog. I don't even know all the sites. WordPress.com is where I started, but it's pretty easy. Anybody have, we talked about stuff, either another question or a contribution to a question that, from your perspective, you have a solution or an idea that works for you really well. Yeah, I would teach in a team parent meeting about my role, their role as parents, and how it works together, and I would help them have a right perspective. I can't save your child without your help and without you doing some things that will work on, but I can help. I can come along and encourage. I do deal with a lot of parents that expect me to fix things. It's something like this. I have a problem. My child's really inconvenient to me because their behavior is embarrassing and it's a problem, and I need you to fix them so that my life can continue uninterrupted, you know. And please do so in such a way that is quick and easy and requires little effort from me. That's kind of what they're thinking. So I try to teach publicly about that. Then in a one-on-one setting or with those parents, I'll sit down and say, now listen, do you really care about salvaging, saving, rescuing this team? Because I can help you know what to do, and I can come behind you and help fan the flames and encourage the process, but I cannot do this alone. I need you to do some things that are going to alter your lifestyle. These problems were created very specific ways, and you're going to have to change some things. I was sitting with a stepfather last week in this very kind of appointment, wrestling with his stepdaughter and the struggle that goes on there. And he comes into me just incredulous that this is happening. And I, after 30 minutes, I said, I'm like, dude, you stood at the wedding altar and married her mother, and you knew she had a daughter. And he goes, yeah, but I didn't know it was going to be this much work. I go, well, welcome to family. And don't think it's because you're a stepdad. This would be true if she was your real daughter. It's work. He was so, oh my goodness, you're telling me I'm going to have to exert effort. And I said, I'm not only telling you you're going to have to exert effort, you're going to have to exert continual effort for years. Are you up to that task? He said, and I could tell what he's thinking. I just thought her mom was pretty. Literally, this guy wasn't saved when he married her mom. He wasn't signing up for stepfatherdom. He did, but he didn't realize it. You know, now I didn't reprimand him for it, but I did set him straight. And I said, listen, you are up to this, and God put you in this girl's life for such a time as this. So step up to the plate and become a godly man and lead her and love her and work through this with her. And the number one thing I asked him to do was pray with her. And you'd have thought I would have, when I said pray with her every night before she goes to sleep, you would have thought I said buy a rocket and take her to Mars. I mean, this look on his face, like, can't I just do something easy, like pull all my teeth out with pliers? I mean, and I said, it's not hard. He goes, yeah. And I had to coach him through. Now look at me. I was like, okay, come on. I'm over the desk. Look at me. Now look me in the face. It's not, here's what you do. You go into a room. You tell her, get ready for bed, and you'll be right back. And once she's ready for bed, you go into her room, and you get down, you kneel down by her bed, and you talk to her for a minute, and you ask her how she's doing. You say, now listen, I haven't been a very good stepfather. Because we're saved now, we're Christians, and I haven't even ever prayed with you. And so we're going to start praying together, and she's going to laugh at you, and she's not going to want to pray with you, and she's going to make you feel like an idiot, and you're going to want to walk out of the room and go, I knew it wouldn't work. And I said, don't do that. And I coached him through every part of it. I said, now, and you say, would you like to pray? And she's going to say, no. You say, okay, that's just fine. And then you pray, and don't preach at her in your prayer. Don't say, dear God, help her to get right with you. Just say, dear God, I love Natalie, and I'm thankful for her, and thank you for letting me be her dad. And thank you for putting her in my life, and she's awesome, and I can't wait to see all that you're going to do in her life. And I just pray that you give her a good night's rest, and pray that you would give her a good day tomorrow, and help her to know how much I love her. And give her a great night now. In Jesus' name, amen. You okay, Natalie? All right, and leave, and let her go to sleep. And just do that every single night. And then eventually she's going to say, when you say, would you like to pray with me? She's going to say, yes. And man, he walked out of my office like, you know, he'd been given some most incredibly difficult assignment. And he emailed me a week later. And by the way, before he left, I said, now you look at me and listen to me. If I ask 100 men to do this, 95 of them don't do this. And I said, don't waste my time. I don't have time to help you with your problem if you won't go do what I said. That's like a doctor. You got a sinus infection. You go to the doctor. He gives you a prescription. You take it home. You set it on the counter, and you don't take it. And then you go back to the doctor and say, it didn't work. I don't have time to meet with you again if you're not going to do what I said. And I said, if you'll do what I say every night, or at least most nights, 6 months from now, your relationship with Natalie will be different dramatically than it is right now. He emailed me a week later. He said, I have done it, and he said, you're going to be shocked. She already said yes, and she prayed with me last night. And I'm not like, yes, that Natalie gave it. I'm like, yes, the dad did what I told him to do. It's so hard to get a man off his rear end to turn off ESPN Zone and go up and pray with his kids. But I'm telling you, the longer I do this, I feel like I don't ever need to teach a Sunday school lesson or preach a lesson to the teenagers. If I just get the dads all praying with them at night, it would be angelic. That would change their lives. But they won't do it. They won't do it. And I've talked to him and Natalie since then, and they're just doing so much better already. He's a brand new Christian stepdad. All he knows is pray with her, and it's transforming their relationship. So, yeah, man, I feel the pain of that question, and boy, do I have to fight it. Good question. Anybody else, real quick? On that particular issue, I don't feel like I'm the best one to answer it because that Asian thing, I would talk to Dr. Sisk about that. You know, at what point do you tell a kid to honor their parents? At what point do you say, okay, obey the Lord? I think that's probably somewhere around 20. That's when God said to the children of Israel, if you're 20, you're responsible for your own decision about the promised land. If you're younger than 20, I don't hold you accountable. You're going to get to go in 40 years from now. I don't know that we can build a whole doctrine on that, but I'd be very slow to encourage an 18 or 19-year-old to go to Bible college against their parents' wishes. I think a few years later, they've honored their parents. There does come a point where they're now an adult, they're now accountable to God, and they better obey him. Earlier on, I would take whatever I could get. If those parents said one time a week, I would do what you're doing. I'd be very sensitive to the family. Because, yeah, long term, you do even want to reach those parents. And if the parents perceive that you are pulling the kids away from them, that's touchy. If they're letting them come once a week, I'd take it. I'd take what I get. And I'd try to work within those parameters. But that's really, you will win some of those parents, by the way, you know, especially if you really love the family. Good question. I don't have any like secret things or, you know, great ideas. I just think it's just a consistent presence of love and nurture and, you know, just gentle touches. Taking what you can with those kids and using whatever influence you have to guide them and direct them and as much influence as possible, but just consistent. You're gonna not get anywhere with most of them, okay? But you're going to reach some of them. It's like Bible clubs in the public schools. You'll see some saved, you'll see a lot come through and visit and stuff, lots of different churches involved and all, but you'll have, in a Bible club public school, you'll have a kid or two that are like gold. You're going to hear a testimony from one or two of them tonight that, you know, we've had Bible clubs on several campuses, but we've had one or two kids now that Bible college, ministry bound from a public school Bible club. So, you know, in those situations, you're ministering, and you're not seeing a whole lot of fruit, but you're going to see some. So don't get discouraged. That's the main thing I'd say is just keep loving them and don't get discouraged. Let me pause for a minute. If you need to slip out, you're not going to offend me. Go right ahead, but I'll stay and answer questions for another few minutes if we have them, okay? Yes, sir, back in the back.
We trust this ministry workshop session was a blessing to you. Plan now to join us in the second week of July for Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011 as Lancaster Baptist Church celebrates 25 years of ministry. Let us know if there is any way we can be a blessing to you.